3 a.m. You hear a knock on the door. Who could it be? A karate-chopping Scully? A stake-wielding Mulder? Maybe just the pizza boy? Even the most innocent of people might have something sinister lurking under the surface. It's always handy to keep safe. That's why this week's sponsor of the Bloom Files are our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Truth is out there. And here, who knows? But either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post-Show Recaps, an X-Files First Watch / Rewatch podcast. Hi, everybody. Mike Bloom here to discuss two very different yet very ridiculous episodes of the X-Files Season 5. I'm reaching out my hand right now just to make sure that my co-host is indeed real and I'm not a part of some sort of weird virtual reality. Though I guess me reaching out indicates that I have arms, Angela, so that means that I'm not in virtual reality.
Yeah, no, you're not weird amputee Mulder.
Yeah, that's there's a lot to unpack there. I'm assuming this virtual reality was like they scanned Mulder's mind and sort of like projected his fantasies. So he's got something going on here, some sort of irrational fear of getting his arms cut off.
Yeah, and then also super into weird nurses.
Yeah, well, I think more so into Karate Chop Scully.
Who isn't, though?
That's true. She has universal appeal. So we're talking about two episodes today, episodes 11 and 12 of The X-Files Season 5, Killswitch, a.k.a. the one that's not about video games.
Yeah, no, it's not, but it's written by the same people who do write the video game.
Right, this is like the prequel.
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to get you pumped because it's like video game-y. I'm not like a video gamer. It's AI. It's
AI, like as if?
Like as if. It's like, it's part of that, no?
Well, it's two episodes that I would say that are about like strange narratives.
Yeah.
Between the virtual reality of
Thought you would like Killswitch because it's like
I like Killswitch because it's very schlocky.
Yeah. Like nerdy cyberpunk stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's very much, I think, evocative of the times. We talked about this a little bit with the lone gunman stuff the 90s view of hacking. It's interesting because, like, I think I saw someone say,
remembering her raccoon eyes.
Oh my God. We'll talk about Esther.
Love it. Love Esther.
And we're also talking about Bad Blood, which is a much better episode, I would say, overall.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We probably could have just done one on Bad Blood, but I thought we'd throw in Killswitch just for funsies.
Well, Fitzy asked, is Killswitch the worst episode we've watched so far? What do you think about that?
That we've watched so far?
Yeah, definitely not of the X-Files so far.
No, I wouldn't say it's the worst episode. I think that there are far worse episodes that we've watched, including, you know, some of the more, like, arc ones.
Yeah, I think for me, it's tough to say worst because I was more entertained by Killswitch than I was by, like, the first part of some two-part arc episodes, right?
Totally.
Like, I keep going back to the one, the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles one. You know, I think that was Colony and Endgame.
Yeah.
Just the one where it's like Mulder running around doing
a bunch
of stuff.
Yeah, because you learn a lot of info, but they're not as like interesting from a plot perspective. And this might be like not the most interesting plot of the Monster of the Week episodes, but I still find it more interesting than action-adventure Mulder.
It's ridiculous. And I think that's a common thread between these two episodes. Mm-hmm. I do think both of them don't really take things seriously, or maybe Killswitch does, and it just doesn't come across that way.
It takes it so seriously that it's not serious.
Yeah, well, let's just get into Killswitch then. Let's not bury the lead here, because it starts on a pretty ridiculous note, right? Because here's some, like, disheveled guy working at a computer at the Metro Diner, which I'm assuming, like, is probably not the diner they go to, right? Though it looks like every other diner in the show.
No, no, it's not the diner that you're thinking of that Skinner got shot in.
Right, I just keep thinking, like, oh, some musty diner, but I guess they all exist in Washington.
Yeah, there's diners everywhere. So, yeah, they're in a diner. This guy's, like, trying to hack the system.
Yeah, with this, like, duct tape together laptop. But, you know, essentially, his whole thing ends up getting busted up because what happened.
Okay,
so tell me what's happening here.
Now that you know the whole episode and the AI and how it's like, it's conscious.
Yeah.
Basically this guy is trying to like, trying to beat the AI.
Right.
He's trying to get in and kill it.
Right.
And,
because they essentially,
he has the virus.
This group of hackers unleash this, like, AI into the net.
Into the net. And he's trying to fix that mistake.
Yeah, I think Esther says what, like, it went off the leash.
Yeah, it went off the leash. And so he's sitting there in this diner trying to fix that, but the AI finds him. And in order to get rid of him, calls a bunch of drug dealers from different, like, gangs, I guess. Yeah, so several drug dealers. They all receive anonymous phone calls about where their competitors,
like, and they're like, your enemy's in this diner right now.
Yes, and so they all are told that the other one is there. And then the last phone call that the AI sends is to two U.S. Marshals.
Right.
And they receive it about an escaped prisoner. And basically, once the U.S. Marshals show up, a shootout ensues and everyone dies.
It's weird. It's like, it's almost like the 21st century version of like, or I guess 20th century version of those robocalls, right? Like, as if the drug dealer picked up the phone, it's like, your car's warranty is in danger. Please call this number.
Yeah. So the AI is doing this to get all these bad people in one spot so that the U.S. Marshals will kill everyone and hopefully kill the guy that's trying to kill him.
I mean, Dave was right. It get caught in the, I just feel like there's a better
The first 15 minutes of the episode are dedicated to this, basically.
Yeah, they really take a long time to drag this out, because you're like, okay,
like, they could have done, like, just two, and then the U.S. Marshals, but instead it's, like, four, and then...
You've done just one in the U.S.
Yeah,
Marshals.
No, true, it's true. They could have just had, like, the person go there and the U.S. Marshals go there, but I guess they wanted it to be, like, a hullabaloo.
Yeah, well, the hullabaloo...
Right, the AI is non-binary, so we're calling it they.
They, yes, exactly, or just genderless, I would say. Yeah. I mean, the hullabaloo gets broken up here by Mulder and Scully. They're at the murder scene. Mulder finds the CD, right, that was about to be... Yes. Well, no, the CD was in the computer. He just didn't press the one button to deploy it.
He just missed it, which is weird. It's also strange that they're called out to this, but I guess it's in Washington, D.C., and it's like a whole, like... They're just called as FBI agents to identify the bodies of the drug dealers. And that's, like, the only reason they're there, and they just happen to find this guy.
Which is interesting, because we're going to find out that this guy is Donald Gelman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mulder's going to recognize him, but seemingly no one else does.
Because, I mean, why would you?
Yeah. He's sort of like this, he was a former Silicon Valley genius, basically, who went AWOL when he realized when he didn't want to, like, sell out.
He didn't want to sell out, and he didn't want to create artificial intelligence, because he was aspiring to do that, and then realized it was too dangerous.
Yeah, so
whatever.
Mulder's gonna filch the CD from the evidence.
Well, he takes the whole laptop, and then he finds the CD, and he just casually puts it in his stereo.
And I think that's also, I would say, you know, that's a sign of the times, but I feel like there are people nowadays even still
that
who are like,
that.
You know, they pick up a CD that some guy in New York City's handing out on the street, like, yeah, let me put this in my computer, listen to this new rap signal.
And
computer gets infested with malware.
Yeah. Not to say that all rappers in New York City are infesting computers with malware.
No, I'm thinking of Mr. Robot, personally. it's so interesting that this version of, like, what the virus represents is a song playing, and the lights flash in the car.
The lights flash in the car,
which doesn't make any sense.
I guess
sense.
You're supposed to understand that there's something more to this than the song that's on the CD, which is Twilight Time.
Yes.
It's
but
Twilight
also,
Time.
Oh, well, my God. It's like a ghost just appeared singing whoever sings that song.
The Platters.
The Platters.
I don't know. One of those one-hit wonders.
Yeah, one of those, like, here's four guys singing.
Yeah, I think I think the lights flashing is supposed to sort of represent, oh, this is more than just a song on a CD. There's, like, gotta be a virus on here.
Gotta, but, like, I just don't know logistically how that even works.
I'm not sure you're supposed to, but you know who would know? The lone gunman.
I was gonna say Gelman, because he's dead.
He is D-E-D dead.
Yes. So, yeah, of course they go to the lone gunman, right? Because we know that these guys are hackers.
Total hackers.
We're going to get into the big picture hackers later
on.
These
sure are
like name brand Hall of Fame hackers. I also do love, though, Scully outsmarting the
yes,
gunman.
Yes, hilarious.
Like, we can't hack this guy. It's so encrypted. And Scully says, oh, just check his email.
Yeah, basically, they're trying to, like, decrypt data on the CD, and they're like, we can't do it. And then Scully's like, well, I do have access to his email account, and somebody sent him an email from the name Invisigoth.
Yes, with just, like, a series of numbers.
And saying David is missing.
Yeah, which is the shipping container ID. I feel like, while that's supposed to be played for a joke, I do think that's useful sometimes of, like, bringing someone in who has that outsider opinion.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have known that it was a shipping container if Mulder and Scully weren't there either, because I feel like that's something that Mulder was very easily able to recognize that string, because he deals in shipping containers a lot.
So they go to the shipping container, and they both get tased.
Excuse me, electroshocked.
Is that what she said?
I think so, but it's basically like this, like, fancy taser.
And we gotta, I mean, this is the star of the episode.
Yeah.
This is
the spook of the
week.
This
is the spook of, like, the year. So this is Invisigoth, a.k.a. Esther.
Yeah.
And she, oh my God, I love it. I love her so much.
Yeah, she's great.
Because she is so...
She's in it to win it.
She is... If you were writing a script in the 90s and they're like, hacker girl, and you just write the character description and like it got struck by lightning and came to life a la Johnny Five, it would be Esther.
It would be Esther. Yeah, no, she's very much, and the actress does an amazing job of just committing a whole hog to this character.
Because it's so ridiculous, right? She has, as you mentioned, these giant sullen raccoon eyes.
She basically has she's painted like a strip across her eyes that like goes to her hairline, which in my opinion is what you would do if you were putting on like a Zorro mask.
Yeah,
like,
or if you were trying to do like, I don't know, some sort of post-apocalyptic primal thing, like something out of The 100.
Yeah, but
know?
Like a lot of like the superheroes will have that like black on under, so you can't see the skin around their eyes, that kind of vibe, but she's not wearing a mask, so it's just black makeup.
Yeah, and she looks incredibly pale, gaunt, her hair is
pulled. How dare you?
Yeah, are you the hacker? I didn't even realize that. Her hair is pulled back.
Pale,
like,
gaunt, hair pulled back into a tight bun. Sounds
tight
ponytail. Like me.
She's got, unlike you, she does have, like, black clothes on the entire time.
Unlike me.
No, you wear colors.
I do now. I do wear more colors.
But I think what is most prevalent here throughout the entire episode is her attitude.
Yeah, she's got serious
attitude. One of the first words she says is, bite me. You know, essentially, like, you get what's advertised.
Yeah, and she's somebody who is basically, like, inside a shipping container with a bunch of computers because she's hiding from the AI, too, is what we come to learn.
Yeah, exactly. But she is, you know, both, I don't know, both, like, rebellious against the FBI, but then also wanting to GTFO because she figures out, like you said, she knows the AI is onto her. And that includes the AI... hacking the Department of Defense satellites and sending a missile to the exact location where she is.
Laser.
No, that was not a laser.
Yes, it was.
That was a missile.
Okay, well, either way, they... it's supposedly by a particle beam shot from a defense satellite.
That's wild to me. Why not just send a missile?
Particle beam. Why not?
Why not just send a laser? But yeah, this is going to be sort of a marker of the episode, is we're going to get a ticking time bomb in the form of like the Google Maps view.
It's like the radar view.
Yes, solely zooming in of, all right, triangulating location. Because while this AI is all powerful, it is the 90s after all, so it's not like completely lightning fast, apparently.
Well, I think the best thing about the 90s and this sort of technology is that anything is still possible, whereas right now we know so much about technology that like... it's almost hard to do a show like this because, you were saying in the beginning, like, I don't understand the logic behind that because we do understand technology now.
Right. We have a much better understanding.
Whereas in the 90s, you could just show a green screen radar thing and it was like, okay, I guess the AI's finding them.
Right. It's this idea
like,
of
LOL.
Of like war games, right? Of,
totally.
Oh, eventually, AI will grow so powerful that we will be unable to stop it.
And you don't think about how they, you don't think about how the AI gets from A to B. You just think about that it got to B.
Or A to I. So, yeah, they, despite, you know, them escaping this, I will also say, I looked this up, that this is, I think, the most expensive episode
they've
filmed so far. I mean, it makes sense considering that everything is exploding.
Everything's exploding. They're using a lot of technology, and then they have basically the entirety of Radio Shack inside of a trailer later.
Yeah, exactly. And when they go into the virtual reality, right, it's also featuring a lot of CGI and green screen. So
yeah, that's right. No things, arms.
I mean, I think it shows that money is not necessarily by quality.
Exactly.
As it were. So despite, again, they take Esther under their wing, but she's still like, you want my address? It's T-O-A-S-T.
Toast.
It's like, maybe that is her address. Maybe it needs to be decrypted.
Yeah.
But it's like they said, okay, write, a rebellious teenager. Okay, what do the kids say these days? Yeah, they say bite me, right?
They do.
They say toast.
They do.
Like, that's what the kid, we got to really tap into that jugular here.
Anyway, we also learn about David at this point.
David Markham.
Yeah, which is Esther's quote-unquote friend.
Sort of, though I think there was a little something more, right?
Like, well, that's why I said quote-unquote. What do you think that means?
Well, I don't know.
I was innuendoing the quotes. I was saying, friend.
It could also be taken the other way of like, oh yeah, you're not really my friend.
Yeah, but context clues, Bloom.
I suppose so. It's been a while since I've done that part of the SATs.
I guess so.
So yeah, it was him, it was her, and it was, what's his name?
Gelman.
Yeah, Mr. Gelman. We're all working on this virus together.
Because Gelman basically built the AI and then found out it was too dangerous. And the only way to destroy it is to find the computer which it's on and put a virus into it.
It's wildlife loose on the net. That's what I love too. That's why I love movies like Hackers, is when they refer to stuff as the net. Which
the net.
You assume that.
I told you about that. I was like, yeah, the net. Like, as if you knew what I was talking about. But there's the movie The Net, starring Sandra Bullock, the 1995 film.
Well, there's also another internet movie featuring her partner in crime and speed, Keanu Reeves. I think it's called, Johnny Mnemonic or something.
I don't know, but this one's called The Net.
But I love it because I feel like that's Hollywood trying to say,
like, we're cool.
This is what we're going to be calling it from now
on.
Yeah,
it did not catch
right?
on.
And even still, years after the fact, we're still calling it the internet. No one has copped to calling it the net far.
And we're not going to be doing it. And we're not going to.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Exactly. So Esther sort of personifies the virus, right?
Yes.
She's like, well, the virus has a sense of humor. Uh-huh. That's why a laser beam didn't get sent to the diner. It really has a perverted sense
of
bloodlust.
Yeah. Yeah, and they also talk about here how anywhere that the virus is going to be housed is going to require a T3 line, which is like basically a giant internet cable. Like, most things are T1 and then T2, and T3 is like,
well, everyone
off
loves
the charts.
T2. T3, they were like, well, I don't know. It seems like we sort of got past that. I don't think James Cameron's working on it. Do we really need a T3?
Stop. I hate you. it's just a secret.
Are you saying bite me?
A source for internet that's powerful.
Yeah, well, because basically what, again, Esther's talking about is like, well, right now it's hiding out, gobbling down all the data it wants. And apparently, it's like staked out its claim in the government data because that's where it can get its mouth on some bites.
Yeah, and so basically they're like, we need to find wherever they have this, somewhere that has a T3 line is where it'll be hiding. And so that's where Mulder uses a government force to find, a secret T3
line. Yeah, sort of. What he ends up really doing is just, finding this place and then just following some wires.
Well, no, I think he looked it up beforehand.
Okay.
He, found the T3 line. You know where the government knows.
The government knows. But meanwhile, Scully...
And then he finds the trailer connected to it.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, he goes to that place and then sees oh, this looks pretty derelict. Oh, what are these?
Yeah.
Power lines. All right, let me follow that. Meanwhile, Scully is supposed to take care of Esther, Esther dispatches her pretty quickly, but also, kidnaps Scully.
Yeah, because she wants to go...
to David Markham's place.
She wants to go find her BF, David.
And her BF is D-A-A-D. Yeah,
that house is destroyed.
No, I don't know. Scully's trying to be the optimist, right? She's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe he's not there.
No. And she's, Esther's like that she basically bares her soul to Scully at this point, saying that her and David were planning to run away together.
Yeah.
They were also planning to Black Mirror it and transfer their consciousness into cyberspace via the AI.
Yeah, basically,
I guess.
We had perfected, because that's what Mulder finds, right? Yeah. He finds this completely wild shack full of computers, stacked floor to ceiling,
wires, computers,
and
metal,
then two of these sort of I don't know, vices or
no, they're like
headsets.
Like hookups.
Yeah.
But for people.
Yeah.
Jack into the Matrix type situation.
Well, and so the interesting thing is, Scully's not exactly wrong. David wasn't at that place that got destroyed.
No, he wasn't. He was
in the Matrix.
So he tries to hook himself up, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, well, I don't actually think that's the case. I think that the AI finds him there and does what it does to Mulder and just puts him in.
And so
and
what?
Kills him.
And kills him. What was it like? If you die in the virtual reality, you die in real life.
Well, I think you would also just die if you were stuck to that thing for months.
Yeah, I mean, Mulder had some pretty significant burns on him, so
yeah,
I imagine.
And also,
that
body looked like decayed, like it had
that
been
is
there.
True. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily like, oh, this body.
It's not. It wasn't
had
feeding
something
him
happened to it. It was, oh, this body just was like there for months at a
yeah,
time.
Yeah, and it died.
Yeah, but this is a wild idea. Like you said, Black Mirror did not do it first. This idea of or even Upload of putting your consciousnesses into the net to leave your body behind and essentially become immortal.
Exactly.
Or that's Johnny Depp movie. Forget about it.
I
referencing
remember.
It on the Westworld podcast, but they have that one where like he's an internet mogul who dies, but his consciousness is in the internet after the fact.
I do not remember that. I just remember the one that's from
Transcendence. That's the name.
Oh, I just remember the Black Mirror episode where they
San Junipero,
where they plug themselves in,
much less happy. There's some, you know, fun tech alert here where the Mulder having the doorbell that like scans his fingerprint and then immediately is able to identify him based on that.
Yeah.
I mean,
we
even have that nowadays.
No, we have fingerprint scanning. How do you think I open my computer?
Yeah, but I don't think like it would go into like, I would imagine if you have like a database of
you would have to,
people, like this is just going into like the overall
maybe
world database, I suppose.
Well, I think you'd have to be fingerprinted, and maybe because he's an FBI agent, it was able to figure out who he was. You know, like if you scanned it, maybe it wouldn't. But if I did, it would, because my fingerprints are in a database somewhere.
So, yeah, like you said, Mulder ends up getting hooked up to the other body. Stuff just starts sparking around him.
Yes.
So I guess, again, that's part of the process. And
we're
led to believe that Mulder is found and taken to the hospital, even though pretty indelicate EMTs, right? They say like, oh, we got ourselves a crispy critter here.
Yeah, and they're also like, the nurses are wearing like 1950s nurse costumes.
Yeah, and we're also like, the doctor is like this peculiar old man, right?
Yeah.
Like the way it's being filmed is almost very dreamlike, where there's a lot of like almost near fisheye angles.
Yeah, and it's also very just very strange.
I mean, the strain just continues when Mulder's laying in the bed and the nurse comes over like, oh, they had to do something because you knew too much, Mr. Mulder.
Yeah, you gotta tell them.
And it turns out that he's missing a left arm.
Yeah, just one, though.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Maybe that's another thing that had to be added to the budget, is like the effects of making him look like a single amputee and then a double amputee.
CGI, there's crazy.
Yeah, and then he's, you know, doing his David Duchovny scream, which is, Samantha! And then the nurse says she's going to help him, and she starts to smother him.
Yeah, she's going to smother him, and he's going to wake up again, and this time he's going to be missing two arms.
Yes. Meanwhile, Esther and Scully are, you know, trying to, I think, make their way to where Mulder was.
Yes, they're trying to find
that virus.
Because she's not able to, like, they think that they've found the AI where it's housed.
But the AI is tracking them to the point where there's this entire, like, sort of climactic scene where they're stopped at a bridge and like they hop onto it as it swings around just in time.
Yeah.
And there's a truck behind them and it gets blown up.
Yeah. And basically like Scully is trying to tell Esther to throw the computer into the water because that's where the kill switch is. And she thinks that's how they're tracking them.
Exactly. And that would probably make the most sense. It's like, if you're trying to track someone, if you don't have any technology on you, the AI can't track you.
Well, the AI tracks that computer and laser strikes it again.
Yeah, exactly. So then we get into what might be the climax of the episode. Certainly, I think the scene that everyone talks about, where Mulder's sitting there now with no arms, a farewell to arms for Fox Mulder here, as Scully comes in and starts fighting off
the nurses. Yeah, she's like, no, like, that's my Mulder, and like kicking and
it's
punching.
It's absolutely incredible.
I love it.
I love it. It's so cheesy. And we're going to get into next episode, I think, like more of a psychological perspective as to how Mulder and Scully view each other.
Yes.
But again, I do think this is a bit of a peek into that.
Yeah, this is Mulder's like fetish of Scully
that's
as, like,
a... That's the weird thing, yeah. It's sort of, like, is, like, I think the AI is trying to satisfy his deepest fantasies, as odd as that is.
And I think he thinks it's hot when Scully kicks butt.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not lying. Mm-hmm. Though it seems like, you know, David Duchovny was doing a pretty good acting job, because I saw that he was not a fan of this.
No.
he
thought this was dumb.
He said, you know, when he was basically directed to be impressed with Scully's karate skills, he responded, "But I have no arms. I've lost my arms. Why would I care about Scully's karate?"
Because it's a dream. Get it together.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, don't bring some verisimilitude into this. But this is where the, you know, some more budget comes in, because Mulder is going to, like, get up out of the bed and he is going to kick Scully.
Yes. Because he knows that she's fake.
And she basically turns into polygons.
Yeah. She turns into polygons and, like, melts away.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, that's when Mulder realizes that the fantasy is broken up. If there was ever an indication to us that this wasn't real, I suppose the jig is up.
Yeah. And then Scully's able to find Mulder, though.
Yeah, and so basically what they realize is that Mulder's been taken hostage in exchange for the kill switch.
Yeah, and but they're like, "We don't have the kill switch." And Esther's like, "I do have it.
I hid it. I tried to double-cross you."
And so Scully's able to, like, get into the trailer, put the CD in the drive, and I guess that releases Mulder, Esther's still there, because they're being tracked.
Well, basically what happens is, like, Mulder gets released because they're like, "Oh, you have the kill switch," but Esther essentially says, like, "Okay, they're coming after me, I'm gonna put myself under," like, she sort of, like, sacrifices herself, because she wants to go to the net, right? Like, she wants to pursue that Shangri-La.
Yeah, with David. But I think the issue is here that they thought that this was gonna... that they were going to kill the AI with this kill switch, and they thought this is where the AI was being housed, but it wasn't. And so they realized that at the last minute.
Right. It's like a monster movie, right? Where it's like, "Oh, yeah, we finally killed Freddy," and then, you know, to the end, ? It turns out he was alive still.
Yeah, so I guess, like, Esther joins the AI in their world.
And I guess we get a confirmation of that in that, as they're discussing it, the lone gunmen get a message on their computer that says, Bite me. Which could just be the AI pretending to be Esther.
It's so true.
Because it has a sick sense of humor.
Yeah, and then the last scene that we get is just panning to a trailer in Nebraska where there's security monitors or cameras monitoring around the outside of it.
Yeah, it's just an RV that has been sort of, like, fenced off. Mm-hmm. And they sort of do, like, the whole haunted house thing of, "Oh, I threw my Frisbee in
there." Like, "Jimmy threw the football
in there." The place
with
the spooky RV. Mm-hmm. And that's where the virus is living.
Yes.
Is just, like, hanging out in an RV, gobbling down all those bites.
Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah, I mean, the ending didn't necessarily work for me because I never really thought of it as, like, a monster movie. Maybe it's just because, again, like you said, this was more of a sign of the times that the big spooky internet was more of a monster than now, which is just, like, technology is everywhere, so it's become more normalized.
Yeah, totally.
But otherwise, like, this was completely ridiculous.
I think it's a good episode.
It's very fun.
It's very silly. It's also a good insight into, like, one of those episodes that's, like, very much so 90s. Culture.
Yes.
Subculture.
Well, we go from culture to cults as we're about to talk about Bad Blood. But everyone take a break. Go grab some pizza. Not too much pizza, though. Don't want you drugged up. And we'll be back talking about the next episode. All right, Angela, we're going to talk about Bad Blood.
Baby, now we got Bad Blood.
Did you not? I was just attempting to do my best Luke Wilson from Mulder's.
You stole my thunder. I wanted to sing Bad Blood.
Okay, I apologize for stealing your thunder there. Bad Blood, this is a ridiculous episode.
This is one of the best episodes.
A lot of people really enjoy Bad Blood. I did, too. I will admit off the top here, it felt a little odd to me that we already did Jose Chung's and that we're sort of doing it again here.
Well, they had success with that style. I think that you need to watch it again without taking notes because there's a lot of nuance in the way the scenes are put together, especially like as Scully's doing the autopsy. There's a lot of comedy there because of the way it's done from her view and the way it's done from his view. So I think that you should watch it again without taking notes because I think you'll get a little bit more from it.
Well, it does have the added wrinkle that Jose Chung's was a Rashomon, but from all these different people.
Yeah, like, and this is just from Mulder and Scully.
From anyone but Mulder and Scully. And this is from Mulder and Scully. So I think it has that advantage in that.
But this is telling you how they think of each other.
Exactly. Like, it's a, finally a window into their brain of how they think about each other, which is interesting. You'd think working on the job together for 5 years, you would gain certain, like, nuances about your coworker, but it does seem they think of each other rather bluntly. Maybe that shows some, like, fatigue working together.
Well, yes, and I do think they're also, they're caricaturizing mm-hmm. them, each other, in a way that, you know, because this was such a ridiculous case for them.
Yeah.
I think if it were a different situation with, you know, more nuance or whatever, maybe they would be a little bit more kind, but... I think it's like Mulder's annoyed at Scully because she was flirting with Luke Wilson, and she's annoyed at Mulder because he stabbed a kid, you know, like all this stuff.
Yeah, well, let's start with the latter, actually, because I really love this cold open where we see, you know, this teen guy, the kid from the Sandlot.
Yes, kid from the Sandlot, running through the woods, you know, telling, you know, screaming, stop, no.
Somebody help me. And he gets tracked down and he gets staked by somebody. And the person chasing him and killing him was Mulder.
Although I feel like you should have known it was Mulder because of the trench coat. But that might be interesting.
No, I mean, I just assumed that
It was like some random guy.
Yeah, that it was... Well, I think that's what a lot of our cold opens are, right?
I know, but they show a lot of... I'm just saying that I'm very used to seeing that Mulder running with his 90s trench coat. So I knew it was, you know, like, you know it was Mulder right
away. Yeah, I'm not necessarily used to his... Maybe because I think more so about the times he doesn't wear a trench coat, like... when he wore the all-denim outfit when he went to Puerto Rico in the beginning
Love
of season
that.
Two. But, yeah, Mulder turns out to stake the kid. Scully finds him, and then those fake plastic vampire teeth fall out of the kid's mouth.
Yeah, so it's like, Mulder thinks he got a real vampire, and then all of a sudden Scully's like, these are fake teeth.
And Mulder goes, oh, shh, and then cut the credits.
Which I love.
I love that, because that's something that isn't done on the show at all. Like, they do not, they do obviously, like, adult situations, but they never use profanity.
Lot, yeah. Yeah, so they are, basically, the episode starts with them talking to each other about how they have to go talk to Corey.
Corey?
Skinner.
Where'd you get Quarry from?
Work.
Oh, okay. They're going down to the quarry to talk to Skinner. Yeah, because it's a disciplinary hearing, because Mulder killed a person thinking that he was a vampire. Though, you know, I think Spencer pointed this out in his feedback that Mulder does know that some form of vampires exist, right? Because this is an episode that we skipped. This is the one between... in the middle of all, like, the Scully gets kidnapped stuff.
No, so that's totally different. That was, like, vampires, yes, but, like, it was just a cult of people who drank blood. So it's,
okay.
You remember later in the episode when Scully's like, there's people who have an erotic fixation with blood.
Yeah, and then Luke replies, erotic.
Yeah, but that was the episode with that.
Okay.
There's also a Chupacabra episode,
yeah,
but I don't know.
A lot of references. So you told me, we did not watch this, obviously, but it would make sense, right, with the X-Files, if you're dealing with weird stuff. You're dealing with mythos, like, it would make sense to have a Bigfoot episode, to have a Chupacabra
episode. Yeah, I actually really like the Chupacabra episode. It's really weird, but...
What happens? Do they encounter one?
But it's, like, a guy.
It's a guy?
Yeah, and he, like, it's very weird, and there's, like, yellow rain, and it's confusing.
So it's this thing, sort of like here, right? Or not just not here, in the first vampire episode of, okay, you think it's the Chupacabra, but actually it's this thing.
It's this guy that has this disease or whatever, yeah.
But Mulder is a little testy, obviously, like, he is a... takes out his aggression on a trash can.
Yeah.
Because not only is obviously Mulder in trouble, but apparently the family of this kid, Ronnie, is suing the FBI because Mulder killed
him. As far as we know, they killed this kid.
Yeah. But essentially now Mulder is going to kind of get accost Scully, right? And be like, what are you going to tell Skinner?
Yeah.
Because Scully's like, I can only tell him what I saw. And he's like, okay, well, what did you see?
Because it kind of sounds like you're going to throw me under the bus. So Mulder asks Scully to recount what happened. So this is how we start the episode with the version Scully remembers.
Yeah. And so we really get to see Scully.
In her version, Mulder is this, like, overexcited, insensitive, and just, like, annoying AF guy.
Just all over the place. Like, he's so excitable.
Yeah, and she's, like, calm and collected.
And reasonable.
And reasonable and intelligent. And that's, like, how she sees them both in her version.
Yeah, and so we get this here, right, where Mulder is going to, in both cases, like, the straightforward story is Mulder has a case of a bunch of cows in a small Texan town being drained of blood with two puncture marks. He thinks vampires are at work.
Because recently a tourist was found with the same situation.
Exactly, which is a little bit of a different situation.
And so they're going to go investigate it.
And they're going to meet Luke Wilson.
Luke Wilson. So in Scully's version of events, Luke Wilson is charming AF.
Yeah, he's got like the chiseled jaw.
Might as well put like a glimmer in his wink.
Which is interesting. You know, I think from what I researched, this episode is really celebrated for like doing the reversal of the male gaze and that it's not...
It's Scully.
Mulder's not the one lusting after... Which is surprising. Like, maybe just because we don't really see a lot of romantic involvement with Scully. I was a little surprised she fell for this guy.
I think she's like... over the bullshit with Mulder right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's being super annoying in her eyes, so she sees this guy, and he's, like, simple, and he's nice, and she's, like, charmed by it a little bit.
And he, like, also wants to play ball with her, right? Like, we talked about that erotic moment, but when she goes into all these explanations as to what vampirism
he's listening to her. That's all a lady wants, is a man to listen to her.
Maybe he just walked into her life at the right time, you know, of, like...
I don't think she's actually interested in him. She's just, like... casually gazing at him.
No, I mean, I think she's lusting after him, but, like, not loving him, if that makes sense. Like, I think she could thirst after him.
Yeah, thirst is different than lust. Because I feel like when women lust, they're, like, trying to get it on, where she's just kind of, like, enjoying his presence.
No, she's, I think, loving the comfort more of a vibrating bed than Luke Wilson's sheriff at this point.
Yeah, and so basically, in the interaction with Luke Wilson or Sheriff Hartwell... they've discovered that, Mulder's acting crazy, first of all.
Yeah, Mulder, finds the guy's shoes are untied.
He goes, wait!
He goes, this means something.
Yeah.
And then
he's very intense.
And then he grabs Scully by the shoulder, and Scully's like, what are we even looking for? And he goes,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's so great. Like, David Duchovny...
I think David Duchovny is so funny in the Scully version.
Yeah.
And that Scully is so funny in the Duchovny version, which is like hilarious. So basically Mulder says, I'm going to take the sheriff and he's going to take me to the cemetery.
Yes.
And he says, is there a cemetery around? The spookier, the better.
And meanwhile, he has unfortunately like foisted the autopsy upon Scully.
And she's sighing and dragging her feet.
Yeah, and I think this gives great insight as to, like...
What always happens.
But I think also how she feels when she has to do the medical doctor side of things sometimes,
She doesn't always want to do it. Like, there's kind of a pain in the butt.
She's so bored. There's a montage that's really great of her throwing all the organs onto a scale sort of, like, haphazardly.
Yeah, and, like, I like how she says each weight, and then the last one she goes, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and then she's like...
Well, that's what she does in the Mulder version, I think, actually.
Yes, and then there's also some fun little things that happens with the Rashomon, like how she talks about, oh, I went to this hotel, and it shows up on the lower third, and then Mulder says, well, actually, it was this one, and then you see it, like, untype and retype again.
Yeah, because they can't even agree on the name of the lodge that they stayed at.
Speaking of the lodge, have you ever been in a hotel that has a vibrating bed?
I don't think so.
I don't think I have either.
I've seen them in movies and stuff, though. I definitely think it was, like, a really popular thing in the 80s and 90s, and then it just, like, kind of went away.
Did it go out of style? Do you think that went away with COVID?
No, I think it went away with technology.
Yeah, but do you think the last stake in the heart maybe was COVID of, like...
I'm sure they still exist out there. The issue is that it's coin-operated, so it went away with the...
That's true,
like, the invention of credit cards.
Do you accept Stripe?
Yeah, do you accept a Stripe or Square?
Yeah, exactly. Is there a place where I can put my card in with the chip to help the vibrating bed? I feel like the vibrating bed also is one of those innocuously created, yet used for very dirty reasons. You know?
Yes, exactly.
Like, having a bed that can entirely vibrate, you can have a real fun night with that. And I don't just mean eating pizza on it.
Yeah, and so they end up with Scully having done the autopsy, exhausted.
Yes, and in comes...
Kicking her feet up, ordering a pizza, because when she... I guess we forgot to mention...
She's, like, fantasizing about it.
Yeah, because we forgot to mention when she's doing the autopsy, in the contents of the stomach are pizza.
Which is weird. I mean,
I guess you're a little clinical when you're a doctor.
Yeah,
but,
and I think you get desensitized enough to this stuff that you're like, oh, there's some pizza there. Oh, I could go for some.
Yeah, and so that's kind of where we leave off, is where she's in the hotel room, Mulder storms in, he's wearing, like, his outfit is all muddy.
Yeah, and he basically says, like, there's another dead tourist, you have to go do another autopsy right now. And she's like, you're being unreasonable, and then Mulder throws himself onto the bed and laughs maniacally as Scully has to go off and do another autopsy.
Well, he's giggling, because it feels nice.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I thought it was more so like a ha 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 ha, I've defeated Scully.
No, he's giggling because he's like a dummy in this version. He's just like, ah, this is nice, la 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 la.
So Scully realizes that there is a common denominator between these two victims. Both had chloral hydrate, which is a drug, in their system, as well as pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
Scully's and also she's also going to get a call here from nobody, which is like, considering all the stuff that happened with Emily, Scully, just stop picking up the phone.
No, so she picks up the phone, she hears breathing, and so she does hear something on the other end, and she's just, she basically assumes it's like a creep, because at the end she goes, creep.
Yeah, but also, like, considering everything that happens whenever Scully picks up the phone, like, maybe just let it go to voicemail sometimes. So, by the time she puts two and two together, realizes what's happening with the pizza, gets to the hotel room, sees Mulder passed out, and here is the pizza guy bearing what looks to be like fangs and like darting past her.
Yeah, she basically sees him hissing and then running away.
And so when she goes to see Mulder, he's obviously drugged up. All he can do is quote the Shaft theme song.
I love that. When he wakes up, he's like quoting the Shaft. It's like so funny.
Oh, that's a great version.
Shut up. You're so mean to me.
I love you.
No, you know.
Is that your version of me when I tell you to like retell the story of this?
Yes. Me being, I'm so like, frustrated.
Like making stupid jokes and being very mean towards you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's get into Mulder's side of things. I will say that, like you said, you know, it's, the comedy is wrought from how they view each other. But I will say, I think that Mulder's view of Scully is much more negative than Scully's view of Mulder.
Totally. Well, so Mulder really takes, I guess you could say, he's like not happy with her being interested in Luke Wilson.
Yeah.
He characterizes him in an extreme way.
But I think in general, he views her as like a negative Nancy, a whiner, a complainer. Yeah. Whereas like she views him as like flighty. I don't know. I would rather be flighty than a whiner personally.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So he views her as just somebody who like can't take her eyes off this guy and has no professionalism.
But even before that, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's going through the slides there and she's like, we have to go to Texas? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so to that point, maybe it is tinged with jealousy, but Mulder really builds up Scully's thirstiness.
Yeah, he also builds up how, like, jealousy is of cute Luke Wilson, because he adds buck teeth to the situation.
Giant buck teeth.
I remember this episode, and that's one of the parts I remember the most, because I feel like you see the whole thing with Scully's version, and then you get back to the beginning with Mulder's version, and he has his mouth shut, and then all of a sudden he opens his mouth, and he has buck teeth.
And he's like, oh, y'all government people!
I'll leave it up to you! Like, really stupid stuff.
Yeah, like, alright, there are no birds around here, because it's winter.
Yeah.
He's really building up this hick.
This hick. Just, like, the guy who doesn't know anything.
And I do like Scully also protesting to that as well. Like, wait a minute. Because then it clearly shows that she did hold a bit of a torch for him.
Well, and it also clearly shows he didn't have buck teeth in the later version.
Yeah. I think what we end up getting is sort of like a mixture of
that
the
he's
two.
He's not, like, so eloquent, but he's also not a total hick.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he is, he's not a complete, you know, redneck. But his neck's, like, a little tinged.
Yeah, exactly. So in this version, Scully's performing the autopsy, and we watch now Mulder and the sheriff go to the RV park, where there's a situation.
But also, there's so many, like, Scully shade looks, right? Like, every time Mulder's talking to the sheriff about all the different types of vampires, it just keeps cutting
to
Scully.
She's, like, rolling her eyes and, like, giggling.
Yeah, Scully is, like, you know, the ultimate survivor juror, right? Where, like, someone's talking, and she's like, oh, I can't believe it.
Yeah, but she's, like, also, like, smiling a little, like, oh, he's so silly. Like, what a dummy.
So Mulder basically says, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on here at the cemetery. But Mulder says, whoever this killer is going to be drawn to the cemetery.
Yeah.
Q2, beep, beep, like, hey, Sheriff, how you doing? It's me, Ronnie the Pizza Boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't suspect me at all.
Also, I wanted to mention in the beginning of Mulder's version how different he's acting. He's, like, very polite. Like, even when he's showing her the slides, he's like, well, I'm going to show you these slides, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal. And he's, like, kind of, like, downplaying everything and plays himself up to be this, like, just, like, genuine, nice, kind.
Which is,
like,
it's such a great perspective.
Yes.
Because Mulder can be so reckless sometimes, but, like, now you realize he doesn't think he's at an 11. He thinks he's at a 5.
Yeah, he thinks he's at a 5, and, like, he even, like, is downplaying it, like, as if he thinks Scully is so sensitive to the bullshit that she's gonna freak out if he says something, which she does.
Yeah, so the two are gonna stake out the cemetery at night, because they still believe, despite the glaring clue in front of them, that our killer's gonna come. And this is when, you know, Mulder's gonna have a conversation where, despite there being many misconceptions about vampires, one thing that apparently holds true: all vampires are very OCD.
Yeah, this is like standard mythology, though. This is
really?
Yeah, this is common.
I've never heard this before.
Yeah, that they're like, that this is like part of the mythology, that they are, they can't stand like mess, or like, it's like, yeah, they, if you drop a bunch of stuff, they have to pick all of them up.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, I'm a vampire, clearly.
I was gonna say, the pale skin. I thought, when I woke up with those puncture marks on my neck. Actually, you didn't have the fangs, right?
I didn't have the fangs.
You just sort of gnawed on it.
I gnawed at you. No, so this is like a pretty standard thing that you hear in like mythology. But yeah, that they have to like...
they have to like stop what they're doing and pick up everything instead of pursuing their victims.
Yeah, and like untie shoes and like... basically, like if you had your hair braided, they would have to take out the braids. Like it's also like commonly thought of as a fairy thing too.
Interesting. Well, but, yeah, the fairy stuff, I guess maybe there's not an episode of Bluey that deals with vampires, so I don't know too much about it in comparison to fairies. But meanwhile, they're going to get called away from the cemetery to go check out the RV park.
Because there's a situation.
Something's amiss. There's an RV that's just sort of doing donuts in the parking lot. Maybe it's controlled by AI. Who knows?
It's really funny because... this is the part where Mulder, they try to shoot out the wheels on the tire.
Yeah, and Mulder has to admit, like, as much as Mulder's coming across as, like, the very down-to-earth hero, he has to kind of come clean to Scully about one of his doofier moments.
Yeah, totally. And so he is, like, pulling, he, like, basically, like, gets pulled around in a circle.
Yeah, well, they try to shoot out the tires. Mulder admits that it's easier said than done, and so he has to go to plan B, which is him attempting
to, like stop it with his hands.
Which is wild, because, I mean, this is a guy that did jump on a train once
upon a time.
He cannot be the Jason Bourne here. He's screaming.
Yeah, he's, because it's just not clearly not working.
And again, this is Mulder's version of events, so you know that, like, this is actually the real deal.
Yeah, well, especially with this part. And so eventually it stops, and they find another dead body with the puncture wounds. And this is when you see now Mulder returning to the motel room and why he's all muddy.
Yep.
And he just, Scully's just like, where were you? What were you doing? Why are you doing that? I'm tired. You made me do another autopsy. And she's like she's screeching
like
at him.
The nagging wife, like, why were you out so late? And so Mulder's like, Ferguson, like, you're gonna have, please just go out and do this again.
Yeah, another autopsy.
But again, Mulder will admit to doing something not so nice. He eats Scully's dinner.
Yeah, he eats her pizza.
On the vibrating bed, which is very tough to do. You know, he's not able to pull himself up onto a moving RV, but he can eat pizza on a vibrating bed.
Yeah, and so the pizza starts to affect him. He starts to get a little drowsy, and this is when Ronnie comes back in.
Yeah, and this is when we find out that that Mulder was the one, the non-voice on the phone, right?
Yes.
Like, he tries to call Scully.
He's muffled.
But the drugs have taken effect. And so Mulder, with his, like, last ounce of non-paralyzed strength, throws a handful of sunflower seeds at Ronnie. I love Ronnie's vampire voice, because you think, like, oh, it's supposed to be big, and,
he just says, why do you have to do that?
Oh, man, why'd you do that?
He says, you're gonna be in big trouble.
And so he has to stay there and pick up all of the seeds, and I guess that's enough of
a
distraction.
Time, yeah.
So that by the time that Ronnie gets onto Mulder, and Mulder's version of things is that Scully shoots him twice in the chest, and Ronnie goes flying off like
a flying
Peter Pan.
Squirrel. And she says, he says, well, I probably won't say that he's like a flying squirrel to Skinner.
Yeah, so we now get, you know, the two versions of things. Clearly, the solution is something in the middle. But for now, I was a little surprised by this. We go up to the morgue where, you know, we get our own little sassy coroner. Spencer let us know that I've never seen Coroner Gas, which is like a Canadian popular TV show, but I guess they brought in an actor from this.
Oh, that's funny.
But I do love his, like, probable cause of death. Gee, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
There's a giant ass steak sticking out of his chest.
Yeah, and so he takes the steak out and he's like doing some notes, and we see Ronnie like sit up, basically.
This is an interesting piece of vampire mythology. I guess I'd assume that after you get, I guess maybe I'm thinking of True Blood or other like Bram Stoker stuff, that after you get staked, I'm assuming you turn into dust or like,
well,
goo.
I mean, maybe he didn't hit the heart, I don't know, but like clearly the stake didn't work, so.
Yeah, well, clearly the stake was more so like, Yeah, like a stopgap measure. Mm-hmm. If you take it out, you just come back to life. No problem.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I think that actually, I've seen that in some vampire movies where you have to keep the stake in. If you take it out, then they wake back up.
So maybe it's a thing where, like, yeah, you uncover a vampire, like, whoa, look at this stake. And then the vampire comes back to life.
That's funny. But yeah, so basically he tries to kill the coroner, but he can't because they took his fake teeth out. So he just gnaws at the coroner's neck.
Like you see Ronnie sort of like feel for his canines, right? And like, he doesn't really have many. So he's just going to kind of like gum this guy's neck.
Which sort of saves the day for Scully and Mulder because they're waiting for Skinner to sort of read them the riot act.
Yeah. If Mulder's ready to jump in with his I was drugged, case here. But Skinner then comes back by saying, like, hold up, bro. We're not having this meeting today because you have to go back to Texas because the coroner got attacked and Ronnie's body is gone.
Yeah. So, and they're like, what? So it's very weird because they go back to Texas to investigate and we see Sheriff Hartwell as he truly is.
Yeah.
No buck teeth, just normal guy.
No buck teeth, but a little simpler, I think, than Scully made him out to be.
Yeah. He's not using a lot of the terminology that he was using in the previous one, but he seems like a nice guy.
But Mulder and Scully are going to get on the same page in more ways than one. Mulder's going to kind of co-opt Scully's earlier theory, right? That like, oh, Ronnie was sort of like a vampire movie fan. That's why
he was also a real vampire.
Yeah, but the reason why he was biting people is because, like, he was a fan of that type of stuff.
Yeah. So his understanding of the situation, which ends up being sort of true, is that vampires exist, but they're not what we think they are.
Right, they're just trying to lead, like, normal, everyday lives.
And this one kid is a little too obsessed with the mythology and is trying to be, like, a Bram Stoker's Dracula.
And we get that because Mulder's going to go off now, go to the RV park, and Scully's going to now have her time. You know, despite his misgivings, Mulder's going to kind of set the two of them up.
Yeah.
And this is when the sheriff reveals, he says, Ronnie makes us all look bad.
He says, I have to apologize on Ronnie's behalf.
And that makes my ears perk up because I'm like, why would you
say
that?
Was like, what?
And then, it turns out, like, it's pretty much implied and then really confirmed that Hartwell and basically the entire town is made up of vampires.
Yeah. And so basically we flash over to the RV park and Mulder finds Ronnie in a coffin, which is dumb.
But like listening to a Walkman. So, yeah. Like, it's like, oh, he's just going to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And he tried to arrest him, but he's surrounded by all the vampires and we kind of see him go down, like Walking Dead style.
Like a zombie movie. He tries to make a cross with breadsticks.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
And I love it, but it doesn't work. Like, he's trying to, I know that this might be a stereotype, but like, let me try this. Yeah. That's what I like about this episode, too,
they don't know what they're doing at all.
Exactly. They're like, all right, is it this type of vampire? Is it that type of vampire?
But basically, he gets attacked to the extent that they drug him and leave him in his car.
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing, is that you would think, okay, this is the end for both Mulder and Scully. But no, it was more so that these town of vampires, like you said, they're trying to live under the radar. Ronnie ruins this for them. They were the ones that were biting into cows this entire time, getting their bloodlust going on.
Or even if they weren't biting, they were just like drinking animal blood or human blood from a hospital or whatever.
Yeah, but Ronnie kind of outed them. And so they basically just had to knock them out, not kill them, so they could pull up stakes, in a manner of speaking, and move out of town.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like that. I mean, obviously, it was one of those things where I'm like, how the hell are they going to get out of this? Especially after Mulder gets, like, besieged upon with the vampires. But all they really wanted was to get the FBI out of their hair so they could get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, exactly. And so the Mulder and Scully are just kind of telling Skinner what happened. And they're just like, at the end, well, I guess we were drugged.
That's essentially what happened, except for the part with the buck teeth.
Yep, exactly.
So this was a really fun episode. Not only was it funny, which of course I appreciate with some episodes of The X-Files, like this is clearly an episode from the fifth season when you know the characters well. It's also a really fun glimpse as to what the two of them think of each other. Like, we know they obviously care a lot about one another.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're so close that, you know, they get annoyed with each other.
Exactly. It's one of those things where, like, if you hang out with someone for a good portion of time, like, their faults become more magnified, where you might only see them from that perspective. Yeah. And it's also an opportunity for David Duchovny in particular, but I think also Gillian Anderson to an extent, to, like, act different.
Yeah, and I do think it's funny, too, because you think that there should be some sort of, like, ulterior motive to these vampires, or like, you know,
right, there are like not really a lot of stakes involved.
It's just like the vampires are all of a huge community and one of them is an actual idiot and his name is Ronnie.
Yep, exactly. So they're just like, all right, I guess we're going to move over to the next town. We'll drive up in our RVs.
Yeah, exactly.
A surprising RV theme across these two episodes.
Also, I read online that in order to create the glowing green eyes of the vampires, fluorescent material was glued to the actors' eyelids.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so happy nowadays that, like, either CGI or just contacts exist.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
That's I would not want to have, like, green tinfoil glued to my eyes to make that cat eye effect happen.
Yeah, whatever. Weird.
So who's the spook of the week for this one?
For this one, I'm going to go with Ronnie, mostly because he's, like, kind of dumb.
I'm going to go with... I guess I'm going to go with, this is more of like a weirdo of the week, but I'm going to go with both versions of Sheriff Hartwell. Not obviously the composite, but both versions of him because they were so just like over the top and wackadoo.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're going to keep going here. We're actually going to go to the next two episodes of season five, but they're two very different episodes from what we just talked about. We talked about two Monster of the Week episodes, but now we're moving on to two ARC episodes.
Yep.
Season five, episode 13, Patient X. And season 5, episode 14, The Red and the Black. Red, the blood of angry men.
I'm out.
No Les Mis references here in season 5, episode 14?
No, not for me. Thank you.
It's interesting. Spencer made a note, actually, that I believe Bad Blood is the official halfway point of the series from a chronological perspective.
Yeah, and I think also kind of from a thematic perspective as well. It's like very well put together and very well like done from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that, you know, the common thinking is that it's all downhill from here.
It's not.
But I will say that I think we'll spend maybe less time lingering in these future seasons as we do in some things like season 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, 5 is like by far one of those seasons where you just like kind of want to talk about every episode, but you can't because you just can't.
Because you're doing this podcast.
Because you're doing this podcast and they told me I can't.
Anything you can tell us about Patient X and The Red and the Black?
You know, honestly, I don't remember. So it'll be a nice little remembering experience for me as well.
Amazing. So we'll see your version of it, my version of it, and the overall version of it next week as we cover episodes 13 and 14. If you have thoughts about it, like Fitzy and Spencer do every week, you know what to do. xfiles@postshowrecaps.com, bloomfiles@postshowrecaps.com, on Twitter, at Ange Pelagi, at A Mike Bloom Type, at Post Show Recaps. We're starting, you know, I guess the back half of the series. It's wild to say.
We're starting on the butt of the series.
We're starting on that fun little juicy sloped butt.
Ew. You're so weird.
Which did you take precedence, umbrage with?
I think sloped.
Sloped was the one you had a problem with?
It was confusing.
Juicy and then sloped. I guess those don't fit together.
No.
But next week, Patient X, The Red and the Black. We're going to keep going through with season 5, which has just been really a lot of fun so far. Special thanks to Corey B for his fantastic theme song. We'll be back next week. Until then, case closed.